From NPR Music, you're connected to All Songs Considered. I'm Bob Boylan. It's the Global Fest 2014 edition, and you're listening to the Bombay Royale. I'm here with Anastasia Tsoulkis. I'm here with Rob Weisberg, and I'm here with Banning Air. We do this every year. This is the wonderful time where we all get together and talk about the music from all over the world. There's a music festival. It happens in New York City at Webster Hall, Global Fest 2014. And 12 bands in one evening, three stages, a lot of walking up and down stairs and seeing music from everywhere. Rob Weisberg, why don't you tell us about the Bombay Royale?
Yeah, well, this is something I didn't expect. The band of my dreams happens to be from Melbourne, Australia. It's a Bollywood... Okay, what it really is, they play music inspired by the golden age of Indian film music, which is all musicals, and the second half of that, 60s and 70s in particular. But what they really do is they play the band that was in these glamorous cabaret scenes they would have in the movies, but that band never really existed. That was actually a 100-piece orchestra back in the studio in Bombay, and a playback singer like Asha Bhosle or somebody famous. These guys are acting the roles, the characters of that band in the spy movie, in that scene. And they even have characters, right, Anastasia? They have the skipper.
The skipper, the tiger.
The mystery lady.
Yes.
And they all kind of interact on stage. And they're working on, we didn't see this in the concert so much, but they're actually working on a movie, a musical about the band and building up these characters. And so this is just kind of them setting out. But they're very wild and theatrical on stage. And they actually do what they do, somewhat surprisingly, is mostly their own stuff. They started playing for Bollywood parties and doing covers of these classic film songs. Some people may know, if you saw Ghost World, an American movie, there was a famous song in the beginning called John Petchenho, and they play that song. And those are the songs.
Well, they slipped in a bunch of covers.
And they played a couple covers at the end. They did this famous kind of psychedelic, hippie-inspired song called Do Maro Doom, because they're playing off this period in the late 60s and early 70s where a little American influence was coming in, but in a very particular way. And you hear those things from the disco beats to the mariachi trumpets. These are all little things that were in the music, in the movies in India in the 60s, and that the Bombay Royale have pulled into their own songs, but also are trying to make it totally original.
Well, they slipped in a bunch of references to very famous songs, sort of for an audience who are big fans of that music.
And they look like they could be the Village People, right?
I mean, yes.
There's costuming.
There's a lot of costuming.
For the naive audience who doesn't know any of this, it was a real sort of onslaught. I saw a number of people sort of very puzzled by it audience who were sort of just unprepared for something quite at that level of shtick.
Yeah, I mean, the element of shtick is definitely there, but musicianship is fabulous, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
This is a big, big ballroom at Webster Hall, but you had down in the basement in the studio, what they call it, just the polar opposite. One man, one string.
Brushy one string, yes, a Jamaican singer who has an acoustic guitar with only the low bass E string, which he plays bass lines on and slaps rhythm, and he's his own band. And it's interesting, someone who works with us at Afropop made a good comment to me during, she said, oh, it's not about the one string, it's about the voice. And it's true, the guy has just a spectacular voice, and he just doesn't need any more than that.
Well, at one point he lost the one string he had.
Well, that was the incredible thing. The string actually broke during his set, and it really threw him, you know? He held up that six-string guitar, and he was doing basically the same thing. He said, look, I don't play six-string.
Yeah.
It kind of took his confidence away, but still, what a great voice. What a beautiful performer.
So let's play from his set down in the studio. Let's play the opening track, and people know this.
Yeah, right? 4 million YouTube hits?
And counting.
Chicken in the Corn. It's really engaging. It's one of his upbeat songs, and he does a cool vocal kind of rap thing mixed in with this earthy thing. Real vocal, you know, it's beautiful.
Hey, Pancho, what's going on, man? You see, I've been to San Francisco. I see my friend, Pancho. He say, hey, one string, there's somebody got to know, you know? I say, yeah. When they're back on the side of Oasis, away we go. We sing this whole country song like this. Chicken the corn, on the corn can't grow, mama. Hey, when chicken the corn, so the corn can't grow. Hey, when chicken the corn, so the corn can't grow, mama. Hey, when chicken the corn, so the corn can't grow. Hey, yeah, I'm my way to San Francisco. Mm-hmm.
Way back my friend and his name was Pancho. Yeah, he said one string, there's something you got to know. We're back in those saddles and our asses, where we go, we sing this chicken in the corn, and the corn can't grow, mama. Hey, when chicken in the corn, said the corn can't grow. Hey, hey, when chicken in the corn, said the corn can't grow, mama. Hey, when chicken in the corn, said the corn can't grow. Hey, hey, don't need to brag, no need to boast. I can rap it from a pillow and a pole to pole. While the music nice, so play them twice, while the girls are screaming out like mice. My name is Brushy, I'm a king of swing. Go play your music and don't let you sing. No, it doesn't really matter what the people wanna say. I rap my music night and day. Rock them night and day. My mama sing the song, chicken in the corn, and the corn can't grow, mama.
In a certain way, I don't know if anybody else thought this, a little bit of his exuberant vocalizing in a way almost reminded me of early, like, Toots Hibbert, really early.
Absolutely. I thought of Toots also. I mean, you're hearing R&B, you're hearing soul, and then you're hearing sort of Jamaican dub rapping, and then you hear Toots. It's all there. He's really got a terrific presentation.
The really interesting thing about this night is that it mixes these big, very produced artists with very stripped down sets. I mean, Brushy's One String for sure is one. Coma Mamas, which is a vocal trio and a cappella trio from Mississippi, whom I loved, doing these incredible close harmonies, were another. And I know they've been signed to Daptone, so I think we're going to be hearing a whole lot more from them.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah. And, you know, it sort of points to what is world music, and it's roots music, except when it isn't roots music. You know, it's kind of, it's an interesting mix. It's all music rooted in times and places, mm-hmm. and Como Mamas definitely is. It's a lead singer and two sisters on backing vocals, and they're just tremendous.
Gospel. Yeah.
Very sweet, rollicking American gospel.
Yeah.
And just done pitch perfect.
And yes. You talk about music from different places. I mean, Abigail Washburn came on with, I mean, she's a banjo player, but has studied in China and the culture of China and brought on
this trio that Abigail Washburn leads, or is doesn't leave, I should say. It's really a trio of all forces. A Chinese artist who sings and plays this stringed instrument that she plucks called, it's like a zither, guzheng.
Same family as koto. Japanese koto.
Yeah, so it's like a table. It's almost like a table of an instrument.
Table
with strings
zither,
on top of it. And a multi-instrumentalist from Nashville named Kai Welsh. She's bringing this clawhammer banjo playing with traditional Chinese music, and they're making it work. You know, there's two completely, you would think, disconnected traditions into this very intriguing whole. And I'm not sure how it would work on record, you know, but as a live experience, mm-hmm. it's fabulous.
Well, they actually introduced a lot of the songs with little stories, some which were very straightforward stories and some about very serious social issues in China and some that were kind of obtuse and goofy.
Like Uyghur Gaga?
Exactly. And, you know, they also are theatrical. And I guess Abigail's been doing theatrical work. She has some background there. And Buffet has an avant-garde background working with people like John Zorn and Fred Frith. So they have kind of this all over the place. They're a very kind of free-for-all on stage. They run around different places, put on pom-pom hats and costumes at times and beards and different things to illustrate stories. They're
Bombay Royale, not the only costume.
In some ways, yeah. They can harken back to each other in such a different way.
We're going to have almost all of these sets online during the course of the week as we produce them. But speaking of costumes.
Right? Yeah, you can't talk about costumes and Global Fest 2014 without talking about big, tall, furry Ukrainian hats. It's just not going to happen. There's a band called Dacha Bracha, who I think blew
favorite,
a lot
sure.
of the audience around. Yeah, I think Head and Tails were a favorite for a lot of people. Mm-hmm. And let's take a listen to them.
Yeah.
So there are these crazy textures. It's a Ukrainian band that bills itself as Ukrainian folk punk, and I think that's totally right on. It's cello.
Subversive, yet.
And subversive. And pagan, and they're hyper-theatrical. You know, it was sort of founded by members of an underground theater troupe, and there's this real sense of theatricality on stage. You know, they've got these white gowns, the women dress in white dresses, and big, tall black hats, and a lot of fog machines. There's a lot of fog machines involved. So there's this epic feeling, and sometimes it can be very ethereal, and sometimes it can be very fierce. And this crazy instrumentation of vocals and bass drum and cello and accordion.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And the textures are amazing.
I thought of Bjork when I saw this and heard this.
Sure.
The extremes in the music, this was my favorite music of the evening, without a doubt. Mm. Costume too, maybe. But that's what I loved. You'd have these long, dirgy drones, and then you'd have this real punky, rhythmic, all beating on drums, and you just didn't know what to expect. I think musically, this will be the thing I take away.
Big build-ups, and everybody seems to respond to them, yeah.
Yeah.
They just make a big impression.
This is the second time I saw this band, Dacha Braha, live. I saw them in Greece at Womax a year ago in the fall, and now in New York, and both times they built from this very ethereal, misty sounding texture into this super intense thing that I think took a lot of the audience by surprise. It seems to me it always takes the audience by surprise, that how they build that energy. And I think it really is punk in a lot of ways.
Well, while all this was going on, down in the studio, in the tight confines of the studio, which is like a real sort of nightclub setting, there was Hasan Hakmoun. Hasan Hakmoun represents this tradition called Ganawa, which is has roots in sub-Saharan Africa, but it existed as a kind of a healing cult and ritual practice in Morocco that is very much centered around music and trance. And the instrument is like a big bass lute. It sounds like a bass, but
it looks
very
like a cigar box with a long stick.
Sure, and it's very rhythmic, and it's this pulsating, bluesy, trance vibe, and he sings in this beautiful, ethereal way. But he's also really a pro at how to sort of take that and merge it with kind of rock and roll sensibility. He's got a really tight connection with his guitar player. A lot of the things are phrases that repeat over and over again, but when he...
And sometimes he takes the center, this instrument, this cigar box-like instrument, and sort of treats it like a proto-guitar.
Sure. He's got all these flashy techniques and interesting soloing styles, and he'll turn the guitar player loose and he'll totally rock out, and it really all just kind of hangs together well. He's a real pro. He's a terrific, powerful performer, and it was nice to... I thought his band really, really cohered well. I thought it was a really nice set.
And you have all these great African polyrhythms going and sort of these great melodies on top. It's so beautifully layered.
Let's hear some.
Yeah. That's Hassan Hakmoun with his group playing down in the studio. While Hassan was finishing up upstairs in the Marlin Room, we had something that's kind of an interesting contrast to that. A griot singer from Mauritania, Nora Mintsimali. Now, griots are traditional singers who mostly perform at weddings and baptisms and parties and within the community, and they're all about using music to remind people about history and talking about families and that. And we know lots and lots of griots from Senegal, Mali. You know, we've seen them and heard them in many, many occasions, and there are all kinds of records and tours, but we have almost nothing from Mauritania.
Well, at all. Like, not a griot artist. Like, Mauritania is really a close society to us.
Griots really have, Nora explained this to me, I was quite surprised. They stick very closely to this idea that they only play within their community. They don't want to make records and go to Paris or all of that.
So how is it that she wound up doing that?
Because her father went and studied music in Iraq. He studied classical music and in Arab classical music, and he came back with this idea, no, we should be playing for the world. And the first thing she said to me in the interview was, I am a griot, but I don't want to just be with the griots. I want to be an international artist. And it's interesting because she's not really changing the music much. She's working with an American drummer who I thought did a really nice job of making those grooves kind of accessible to the sort of blues rock sensibility. But it isn't tampered with at all. They're playing the music very straight. But she really has this idea that she wants to bring it to the world, and more power to her. It's an incredibly powerful, just an amazing voice.
I think over the past few years, we've kind of become very familiar with this trope of Tuareg desert rock. You know, we've got Tanarwin, and we've got Bambino, and we've got Tarekaft, and Tartit, and all these wonderful artists. And that's not to disparage them, but we've sort of said, oh, this is what this kind of music from this part of the world, from these kinds of people, sounds like. And I felt like she really turned a lot of that completely on its head for me as a listener.
I mean, Tanarwin, I think, before I like play some of some Mauritanian pop music or like Nora Mintsimali or electric folk music, which is really what they're doing, electric traditional music.
Yeah.
Tanarwin, if you've heard Tanarwin, you may find this interesting, but there are some really amazing differences. I mean, A, the traditional instruments obviously are a little bit different, and she does play her traditional
it's
harp lute.
Ardin, yes.
But also, the way the guitar is played, there is a particular, both an effect, which is, and also the tuning, the modal tuning, and even modifying the guitar, right, Banning?
Yeah, well, this is what was interesting to me. I mean, I'm, you know, a big African guitar guy, and I didn't realize this, but apparently within the Mauritanian griot community, they routinely do this over the last 20 years. They take a bunch of frets, like 5 or 6 frets from the high end of the neck, remove them and place them down lower on the neck so that they can play these other modes. There are 5 modes that are used in that music, and they actually have this big structure in a traditional setting where you move through the modes and you can't go back once you've left one mode. You can't go. I mean, they have this kind of
that
big,
sounds like Arab classical
right,
exactly. It's
yes.
a whole Arab classical yes. kind of overlay, but in the scales themselves, these micro. I mean, you listen to that, you think, how the hell can you play that? And now I understand, because it has frets in places that they've specifically put there to be able to play those modes.
Let's hear some of that electric guitar mixed with the instrument she plays. It's called the Ardin.
Yes. Nora Mintsimali is playing this bridge harp that we were just talking about, the Ardin. And it's interesting, her technique, she's using a lot of fingers. A lot of West African lutes and harps and even guitar are played with thumb and forefinger. But she's using at least three fingers on each hand and playing this really interesting, complicated stuff just on one plane of strings. I was quite struck by that.
Maybe she should get together with Abigail Washburn to talk about a claw hammer technique.
On the big stage was, at times, music that felt that it could be anywhere in any rock and roll club or large venue in the U.S., and Balaji was one of them. Real interesting character. Anybody want to?
Sure. Balaji is a Congolese rapper, singer, musician, band leader who grew up in Belgium. He's a real sort of multicultural person by nature, having been a Congolese who grew up in Belgium. His early musical friends were Colombians who introduced him to all kinds of Latin music. He said he actually listened to more Latin music when he was young than Congolese. The great Congolese music, which used to be like the disco of Africa, I mean, it was the most popular dance music of Africa, the 70s, 80s. Into the 90s. But he was kind of alienated from that. That was his parents' music. But then he had this revelation of discovering that music and falling in love with it. And he's worked for 4 years. His guitar player, Dizzy Manjeku, is, incredible.
He was amazing. He could be a band leader. I mean, and he would draw huge international audiences.
And he played with a lot of the big guys.
Oh,
right?
Yeah. He played with Franco, Tabule, all these people.
That kind of very liquid, fluid, beautiful African guitar sound.
That's such
very
a classic. Lilting. Yeah. But in Balaji, we should point out, is a young guy. So he grew up in the hip-hop generation.
Exactly.
And so all this Congolese rumba and sukus and all the things that his band is, and funk and James, there's a serious James Brown vibe last night that I hadn't heard from him before. But he's sort of layering hip-hop into these things and saying, okay, this is my generation's music. This is my music.
You know what else was kind of striking about seeing him live, though, was the way that they would jump right from a really straight-ahead Congolese rumba or upbeat sukus into like a R&B song or blues or rap, like just boom, like a crazy segue.
It's very original what he does.
Yeah.
And he talked to me also about how much he fights with the conservatism within certain musical communities. Like Congolese music is really codified. It hasn't changed much. People know what they want, and you got to play by the rules. And he said, it's a very conservative music form. But he said, hip-hop, he said, is even worse. He said, hip-hop is the most conservative genre of music I've ever encountered, or something to that
effect. Because of the rules?
Which is fascinating, yeah. But it's all part of the difficulty of being accepted in these worlds when you're breaking the formula.
So let's listen to some of Balaji, get an idea what this mix is.
Chaque phrase, chaque mot, chaque détail, chaque photo, chaque visage, est-ce un mirage, une illusion, un hologramme? Où est-ce la raison qui a rendu l'âme atterrant, vue du ciel, comme la terre vue du ciel, paraît loin de nous, ça paraît irréel. Quand je pense à qui t'es kin, et les tiens, qu'ils chassent au tritni, comme les prénoms chrétiens, ton fils, un assassin, on regarde près à 13 ans, tout son assurance dans un M16. À 14 ans, en quarantaine, ils l'ont pris pour un sorcier car il s'est foncé au kérosène. En arrivant dans l'Est, il a tué par accident, en introduisant un prince pour un débutant. Putain, l'horreur est humaine et non s'extermine. Il voulait être un sauveur, pas un soldat anonyme. Même si l'Occident abandonne, le péage de nos minéraux.
One of the interesting points that he made on stage to the audience, being at a global music festival, was saying, and I thought this was really weird, he said, this isn't global music. This is our music. At least I think that's a quote. I didn't know how quite to take it. I felt like he was dissing in some ways the world music thing, or was he just embracing and loving his as unique, and I don't know.
Or he's saying yes and yes. I mean, okay. Is that a possible answer?
That may be.
This year on NPR Music, for the first time, we published a sort of favorite world music of 2013. The comments, and this is not to diss our audience at all, but the comments were like, world music, that's such a loaded term. How can you use that term? Which, you know, takes us back to the argument we always have about world music is what the hell does it mean? And, you know, why do we call it this? And I thought what Balaji did last night was sort of challenge perspective in a lot of way. You know, is this music that a bunch of people who are coming from a specific ethnic background or racial background or field of knowledge are coming and sampling as sort of in a touristic way? Is it a question of various communities sort of sharing music together? And what are the presuppositions about what the shared connections are between them? I thought it was really interesting. And I thought good for him for talking about that and sort of challenging what we're talking about.
But, you know, also, though, you know, artists, in a lot of artists, and he clearly wants to be an independent artist and do his own thing. And that, and, you know, originally his own thing probably was R&B and rock and hip hop. And then he had that sort of thing that sometimes happens, Latin music to like first generation kids who have roots somewhere else. And they're like, oh, my, you know, actually some of my roots are kind of cool, too. And then he gets into. But I also, musicians very often don't like to be pigeonholed. And I get a sense a little bit that he just doesn't want to be put in a niche. Don't tell me what kind of music I'm doing. This is the music we're doing.
But at the same time, he's very aware of the associations in his music. I mean, he was talking to you about how, hey, look, I got introduced to Latin music in Belgium by Colombians who came from a place where they used to get African records, including Congolese records, and take the labels off them so that other DJs wouldn't know what they were using. And you know, I mean, that is deep. And he's very aware of all these complicated interactions that go into what he does. So it's not sort of... It's not anti-analytical, this rejection of world music. It's just that it's just a resentment of the sort of absurd simplification of it.
Yeah, for sure. And I want to say that, you know, it's not an academic exercise. He was so suave and so magnetic on stage.
Yeah.
What a presence.
So much fun. That show was so much fun.
He was wild. Yeah, I hadn't realized.
You can't take your eyes off him.
Yeah,
it's just amazing.
He's a character. He's really something.
So you have this incredible, serious dance music that Balaji has going on. And then down the studio, you had another totally dance-driven set by a group who sounds like they're way more, speaking of academic, way more dry and academic than they actually are, KIT, which is a group...
That was not...
Cuenta y Tambú.
Wow.
Yeah. Which is Stories and Rhythms, which is about as, you know, let's eat our broccoli as name as you can imagine, you know.
Tambú is the drum that
Tambú
they play.
Is drum. And they started out as musicians of Curaçao descent, which is a Dutch... country. It's part of the Dutch kingdom.
An island off Venezuela.
And they started as an educational group to go teach school children in Amsterdam about this remote or relatively remote part of the Dutch kingdom. And they've morphed into this hyper... I almost want to say, like, they've got a lead singer who clearly...
Sexy?
Sexy, but she clearly looks up to M.I.A. as one of her primary influences.
Okay.
A lot of neon lipstick and cutout tube top, you know, going on. And it's very, very heavily electronic. But tambu is the traditional drums of carnival and other traditional music from the island. And they're definitely riding the global dance music tip.
Yeah.
You know, that is what they're all
about.
Yeah,
they did the most straight-ahead club production of their rhythm. It's four to the floor, straight-ahead. But with the traditional drums and...
And I thought the drums were the best part. And that's not because I'm some sort of, you know, traditional police person, but to me, that was the most interesting thing, much more interesting than just sort of four to the floor.
And their choral singing is nice. It's nice to hear those very sort of folksy vocals with the big sort of DJ club rhythm. And they were just really appealing on stage, you know. You just can't help but get sort of caught up in it.
Let's hear some.
DJ Bob, can I switch? I am down your brain, you bitch. Surrender, your camp down, not my knees. No, that's me, no, I need to know. This man, they be kind of hot. When push come, I'm shopping, I miss ya. Can't keep on stopping, you sister. I just be captain, that is the agenda. Don't come with the bitches, I see in your face. Quick, surrender, your challenge, I take it. Like Campino, can be me, no. Collecting me, glory, and this, when push come, I'm shopping, I miss ya. Can't keep on stopping, you sister.
switches.
What?
Show me where your light switches. Show me where your light switches. Show me where your light switches. Show me where your light switches.
What?
Show me where your light switches. Show me where your light switches. Open up the leg.
Swap by for jockey swap.
We're listening to Quente Tambu, KIT, from Curacao / Amsterdam. And there was somebody else at this edition of Global Fest who I thought did cool in a really interesting way, which is this Lebanese electro-pop singer-songwriter named Yasmin Hamdan. And she's in the new Jim Jarmusch film coming out this spring, and she's got this very sort of smoky French club vibe going on.
With a great electric rock guitar behind it. You could walk into a room and not question that this is just another great band. You know, you wouldn't box this on first listen into saying this is world music.
I think that's totally fair. I mean, and I know from things I've been reading and hearing about her that she's gotten a lot of offers from international labels saying, you'd be great if only you sang in English, and would you switch over to singing in English? And she speaks perfect English. She grew up all around the Middle East and in Greece and speaks fluent English, but she's made a very particular choice that she wants to represent who she is.
And I
think that is incredibly, not just laudatory, but it brings a whole different vibe. She was part of an electronic duo called Soap Kills, which was kind of the first big sort of Beirut cool underground
band. That was their MO too. They sang in Arabic but did electronic based.
What was interesting about her in the beginning with Soap Kills is that she had no background in Arab art music, but they did some songs that were, you know, the kind of songs that would be sung by these art singers like Feruz or Umm Kulthum, but she sang them in this kind of simple punk way that purists found incredibly offensive, but that really caught on with the public. I mean, Soap Kills is probably the most important pop act that Lebanon produced in, you know, the latter half of the 20th century. You know, she's moved on, Yasmin. She lives in Belgium now, but she's still incredibly well remembered there because of that group. And when I saw her last night, just, you know, having become familiar with a lot of the older Soap Kill stuff, I see how much she's grown as a performer and a singer, and just the nuances in her voice and everything. It's really fascinating how something that started out as being sort of subversive and punk in that context now seems very suave and cool and, you know, and worldly.
Oh,
I'm not an expert in every Arabic dialect, but one of the things I think is really interesting is that sometimes she does original material, sometimes she picks up traditional material, but she code switches between dialects. So there's all sorts of nuances of meaning and sort of history laden in there. And I think that's very interesting to hear how she's playing with all those regional identities and regional tropes and norms. Yeah, and I think it is so great to see somebody who upends the I think what a lot of Americans' expectations are of what a performer from the Middle East of Muslim heritage brings to the fore. You see a woman's, you know, skinny, tight black jeans and heels and sleeveless top and low cut. And the other night, I know she peeled off the top and went down to, like, essentially a bra top. It sort of upends expectations. And, you know, Beirut, since, you know, for decades, or certainly before the Civil War, was, like, the epicenter of Arab cool. That was Paris, you know. And to see an artist like Yasmin bring that back and be very proud of that identity and not sort of say, okay, I want to be the next St. Vincent, so I'm going to sing it in English. Good for her.
Yeah.
Which sounds incredibly condescending, which is not what I mean at all.
And then we keep going back and forth, and we're running up and down the stairs here at Global Fest to the three different stages, and the big, amazing brass band from Romania was Fanfare
Ciocărlia.
who are actually playing at my desk this week, and we'll have a tiny desk with them. I know they were big. I've met them before. I try to imagine them behind my desk, and I thought, oh, this is going to work. And then I saw them last night, and I went, uh-oh.
That was the very first thing you said to me at that set last day. You had this sort of shell-shocked look on your face.
I can't figure out what
I need to build an extension on that desk.
Yeah.
But, you know, yeah, I mean, the thing is, they're a 12-piece Roma, or, you know, they come from a Romani or Gypsy village in northern Romania, where, you know, brass bands came to that part of the world through the Ottoman Empire, the Ottoman military bands. And I guess apparently the tradition kind of died out everywhere except up in these northern Roma gypsy towns. And so there they were some years ago. And one of the guys from this great label in Europe called Asphalt Tango went over there and said, hey, I think you guys could maybe do something in
Europe.
You've
got something here.
You've got something here. And they've got some wild stuff. But it is like, I mean, speaking of punk, I mean, it's loud and fast rules. And that particular genre of gypsy brass music in northern Romania that they play is the fastest, thrashiest stuff.
There are clearly a lot of people who I think were encountering Fanfare for the first time last night and just went nuts for them with reason.
So we'll put that music online, the entire concert. We'll have the Tiny Desk concert soon, assuming we're going to all fit. But the evening went out on this incredible band who I'd never heard of before. Anybody want to take a
That our good friends at Al Latino, Felix and Jasmine, were hot on the Sergio Mendoza y la Orquesta tip for a while now. And man, were they right on. So it's this band led by this young guy, Sergio Mendoza, who takes cumbia, Colombian cumbia, you know, so that accordion heavy kind of shuffling beat, and mixes it with 1950s Cuban style mambo and a couple of other Latin things thrown in here and there in this incredible tight band that is just so fun, so free and liberating, and just he's nailed it.
A lot of fun stuff. They did a weird weird cover too of Tusk by Fleetwood Mac.
Yeah, right.
Oh my gosh, Cumbia Tusk, which was pretty great. You know, and it's kind of an interesting combo, because on the one hand, cumbia has become this big entryway because there's a huge cumbia boom, and cumbia's always big all around South America, but in some places it was considered for a while a little bit your grandparents' music. And then, like, in the last 10 years, became
everybody
really hip, and there's techno cumbia and remixes and all kinds of stuff.
Yeah.
But it's also brought people back to the older stuff. But okay, so they've got the cumbia in there, which is a natural thing to do anyway, but then going to the mambo is a whole other...
Lest we forget, I don't think we've mentioned where Sergio Mendoza is from. He is from the Latin hotspot of Arizona.
Yeah.
This is an American.
Because a lot of it's happening here, and a lot of it's happening all through the Americas. Yeah, that's a big back and forth, too. I mean, because there's so many Spanish-speaking kids here now, it's great.
That last band, that last show on that smallest stage, when everybody who's left standing after 12 shows comes down and joins in that room got really hot and wonderful.
Yeah.
Those bands are often the ones, for me, that you see rise to the surface in the coming year. Red Barat is certainly one. La Santa Cecilia, another.
Debo Band
a few years back. Amazing. Any favorites you all think that one? You get to pick one. I'll go around.
That's cool.
All right. You get to pick two, but pick. You get to pick two. I'll go around the table. Anastasia.
I thought this year was full of bands I loved. I thought this was one of the best curated years I've seen in a long time at Global Fest. For me, I think the top. Oh, you're going to hate me for saying this. Top three discoveries. Dacha, Bracha, Balaji, I thought it was best that I've ever seen do, and Yasmin Hamdan.
Rob Weisberg, who, incidentally, folks, I don't think I really clearly said Anastasia works at NPR Music, and so you've seen her, probably seen her name and heard her. But Rob Weisberg has a show on WFMU, Trans-Pacific.
Trans-Pacific Sound Paradise.
Why can't I always want to put the word world in there?
I should have, yeah. But it's too late now.
Trans-Pacific Sound Paradise. You're two. Maybe I should only give you one since she took it. No. You're two.
Well, it's tough because I would have picked, in terms of break, you know, people just kind of, the chance that they could be, I don't know, big in quote-unquote world music, that's a complicated thing in and of itself. It doesn't mean becoming Eminem. But Dacha Bracha, yes. I think I agree with Anastasia. I like the Bombay Royale, if things fall right, because of the theatrical potential, the potential for South Asian audiences, club audience, as well as the world music, rock festivals. They already played Glastonbury, actually. So I like them.
Banning Air, Afropop worldwide.
I'm going to go with Balogi and Nora Mintz-Semali because I just think that's a voice that is so powerful. I mean, I'm not saying that she's going to be, you know, a huge pop star, but I think we're going to be seeing a lot of her.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I second that one, too. So that's my third.
Great. And let's go out.
Wait, you didn't tell us yours.
Yeah, well, Dacha Bracha, for sure, Knockout, they have to come to the Tiny Desk. I mean, just that has to happen. And I think you put them, and this is the thing with Tenoriwen and other bands, when I see them in rock clubs and you don't put them on that kind of grander stage and you're not sitting in a comfortable seat, every one of these bands would knock you out. And I love and I hope that more and more they just infiltrate all of these clubs that people just go see music on a regular basis and knock people out. And that's what happened with Debo Band, it's what happened with Red Barat, and you see it over and over again. And I hope some of the bands that don't live in this country, it's a little harder for those folks, but I hope they start coming to nightclubs. And I think, I think Sergio Mendoza would be an amazing band at, you know, any of my favorite nightclubs and around this country. So let's go out on something hot from that, from the last set of Global Fest 2014. I'm Bob Boylan for NPR Music. Thanks, everybody.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you. Saxophone. Salvador Duran on the box. Let's hear it for Salvador one more time. Come on.
Ooh, thank you.